This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to find out what folks who are still working with their insurance companies over Irma-related claims should know and what property owners should be considering as this year's hurricane season approaches. But first, with hurricane season just around the corner, it's time for folks to start thinking about preparation plans. Last year, Irma reminded Southwest Floridians that the need to prepare properly is no joke. I'm joined in studio by Jeff Huffman, a name probably familiar to many WGCU listeners. He is a meteorologist with the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. He and his team spent hours on the air with us at their studios in Gainesville. Together, we walked through the landfall of the biggest hurricane to hit Southwest Florida since 1960. He's traveling around the state visiting radio stations to get a sense of how they plan to handle the upcoming hurricane season with coverage and collaboration. Jeff, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. It's nice to have you here in person.
Oh, yes, indeed, Julie. It's nice to be here.
You usually just join us over the phone. I don't get to actually look at you.
Yes. Get your facial. I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
Well, getting your facial reactions to some of the stuff that I say is probably not a bad idea, too. We're talking hurricane preparation on today's show, and we'd like to hear your experiences. You can give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Jeff, tell me about the trip you're on this week. You're visiting most of the stations?
Yeah, and I'm on my way to West Palm. There's a Governor's Hurricane Conference there this week. I attend that every year. And, yeah, so on my way down to South Florida and on my way back, I like to visit all of our partner stations just to obviously, this year we're talking a lot about Irma, but in each hurricane season, talk about ways we can continue to improve on a product that is already serving the entire state with public radio emergency information.
So tell me about the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. What does it do, and how does it connect all these different Florida public media stations during a storm or a serious weather event?
Sure. Your listeners might remember during Irma, we would broadcast from our storm center with real-time live updates throughout the entire 80-plus hours of the event from when Irma touched the Keys and when Irma left up in Georgia. So our goal, our mission, the reason this was founded 3 years ago is to provide this seamless coverage across the state, because in a hurricane or in any type of weather emergency, your listeners may be traveling. Many of them were evacuating, maybe moving to different parts of the state. We know Floridians come and go a lot. There's a lot of visitors to this state. So we thought it was a need to have this seamless coverage no matter where you are in the state to handle. We know that Florida has 6 months of the year. The weather can be really, really nice. But we also know that some severe circumstances can come in the state from natural hazards.
So you said 80 hours you guys were dealing with the Hurricane Irma. Now, how many people are on your team, and how do you rotate all
that? We have two full-time meteorologists and then a couple of hosts and a producer. And, we also do a lot of social media, digital, a lot of Facebook Lives. Those were really important during the hurricane. So it's a pretty small team. We have some student forecasters that assist us as well from the University of Florida. And then, of course, our own WUFT, which is an NPR affiliate in North Central Florida, provides some reporting as well. But the team of meteorologists is small, too.
But, small but mighty.
Yes, but mighty. That's correct.
So you were on the air here in Southwest Florida in the run-up to and the actual landfall of Hurricane Irma. So I'm wondering, we were here, obviously, on the
yes.
air, and you were up there on the air, and we kind of had this great, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, and all these little breaks where we kind of worked together covering that. But I'm wondering, because I wasn't able to listen to what you were doing because I was planning what I was going to do next.
Of course.
What were you thinking? What was going through a meteorologist's mind as you're looking at the radar and the models and all of that information, and that's actually making landfall on your watch?
Julie, you probably experienced this, your team as well, some real raw moments of understanding and real, I guess I will call them come to Jesus moments, where you really understand the potential severity of the event. We were thinking many times, Cindy and I both, and even we had the luxury of former FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate sitting in with us a little bit before the storm. We were really thinking the worst case scenario was at play with Hurricane Irma, especially if you remember on the Friday night when the forecast data started to shift much further west, including the possibility that it stayed just offshore to your west and then made landfall, say, near Bradenton or in Tampa Bay. That would have been an extreme situation for this area. If I had to put it on a scale of 1 to 10, considering what Irma looked like and we knew how strong it was, the outcome of Irma on a severity scale for Southwest Florida was probably 5 or less, believe it or not. I mean, it was the potential for an 8 or 9 type impact to this part of the state was there. Thankfully, it did not hurt. Of course, we know it was a significant storm and unfortunately caused a lot of damage.
Yes.
You know, but we have that, those things, those thoughts were going through my mind a couple of days before. Friday night, I was up all night because I was worried that the worst case scenario could happen here in Southwest Florida.
Oh, I remember Friday night. Yeah. I was very nervous. Yeah, we were scared. So you were when you were covering the storm from Gainesville, you talked about the spaghetti models,
yes.
Right? And those are the ones that everybody pays attention to because it looks like spaghetti and it just kind of tracks the eye of the storm. But then you coined a term that's also kind of important. That's talking about the sauce. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah.
Did you think of that ahead of time or
no.
Was that part of being awake for too many hours?
It may have been that part of that, yes. but, you know, leading up to the storm, and by the way, when I mentioned sauce, I've got to give you a shout out for your wonderful lasagna you just shared with us before the show. That had some great sauce to
yeah.
it. Thank you for that, by the way. We were seeing a lot of people on social media. This was 5 or 6 days out. They just were begging for information. There was a lot of anxiety. So I said, okay, let's take those spaghetti noodles, if you will. You got to throw some context behind them. You got to understand the science. In this case, we'll call it the science or the sauce behind what causes the model lines to shift certain directions or to maybe congregate in certain areas. So, yes, kind of on the fly, I thought, what good is noodles or good are noodles without the sauce? So we
True.
Need to have that context. And I think a lot of people in our weather world do not share that enough. So, by the way, Irma kind of made it easy, so to speak, about communicating the sauce. It was either the left side of the state, the right side of the state, or right up the middle of the state. So we came up with some scenarios, the saucy scenarios of what could happen. And we just followed those the entire storm.
So. Sometimes when you've been awake for 12 hours or, 24 hours
right.
in a row, you just kind of just have to go with it. When
yeah.
you're 12 hours past your bedtime. Yeah, it was a really interesting way to look at it. And, you know, you talked about people's need and desire to have information. And it's people want to make an informed decision about whether or not to leave their home or whether or not to go north and get out of the state. Am I going to get stuck in traffic? Or am I just going to be going with the storm? So there were a lot of people that had a lot of anxiety, like you mentioned, and
yeah.
really were just very hungry for some spaghetti and sauce information, I suppose, right?
Yeah, sometimes, remember this, sometimes the best decision after you weigh all the things is to wait just a little longer to make the best decision. We all know that evacuation takes time. Takes sometimes money, takes resources. You have to plan ahead. You mentioned it at the top of the show. It was a reminder of the importance of planning ahead. If you've come up with a really good plan and you feel really good about it, one of the best benefits to that plan is the peace of mind that you're going to have when a storm is breathing down your neck. And there's all kinds of other benefits, of course, financial, personal benefits to having a plan, life benefits. But I think the most important thing to remember is that the peace of mind you will have knowing that you've come up with a plan. And then, Julie, when you're facing an evacuation, and we had all these people asking on Facebook, hundreds of comments coming at us about, I want to know this, I want to know that. You know, 4, 5, 6 days out, we cannot credibly give you the exact details on the potential impacts of the storm. So that's why I say sometimes the best decision might be for at least a few more moments is to wait and to see what happens next with the storm and then act upon your plan. Because if you try to move too early on your plan, it can lead to chaos. It can lead to that feeling of I did this and I didn't need to do this, you know, or maybe I made the wrong decision. Irma was a challenging storm because so many people couldn't decide go north, go east, or don't go at all.
Yeah, because you couldn't escape going east or west with that one because it covered the whole state.
Right. It was a difficult one
yeah.
for sure.
And even no matter where it went, it was going to cover the state.
Yeah. The enormous size of that storm was truly unique. And I think I don't know if there's a record book for this or a stat to compare it to, but it was certainly a very unique storm. I almost maybe unprecedented in the fact that it was so large and it paralleled the state basically from south to north.
It was geographically just huge.
It was.
And so, one of the things that was really hard to predict was the storm surge, and that caused a lot of evacuations and mandatory evacuations in a lot of places. We got lucky, a lot of people say. Of course, if you're in Everglades City, you did not get lucky.
Right.
A cringe every time people say, you know, oh, well, we didn't really see that much of a storm surge, but you go to Everglades City, they saw it and they took the brunt of it. And Everglades City and Point South there in Collier County. But can you tell me, and you were saying before the storm, you were nervous about this because if that storm had moved just a little bit more outward, out over the water. Mm-hmm. How devastating could that have been?
Well, the National Hurricane Center in their official Irma report did a study, just to give you an example. If the storm would have been, I think it was 30 miles to the west, only 30 miles. And by the way, in the grand scheme of a hurricane track, that's a wobble. Okay, that's an unpredictable shift, kind of similar to maybe how Charlie wobbled back in 2004 a little bit and then came ashore. 30 miles would have made the difference between about 20,000 people who experienced the life-threatening storm surge of 3 feet or greater versus 200,000. Much of Fort Myers Beach, that area would have seen severe, devastating. Cape Coral, for example, devastating storm surge with just a shift of 30, maybe 30 to 50 miles west.
Just staying over that water and being able to push it back.
Yeah, because remember, it's the right with the forward motion. It's that right, or in this case, east side that had the water coming ashore. And Fort Myers and points north had mainly an offshore wind the entire event.
Yeah. So, well, speaking of hard to predict, how does the National Hurricane Center predict an entire season? I always wonder about that. They come out with this, it's going to be an active season, but is that just kind of the new normal?
And the National Hurricane Center or NOAA will come up with their official forecast at the end of the month, and there's another reputable agency, the Colorado State, Klotschbach. You know, you have to remember that these are large, very general ideas of how the Atlantic Basin will behave. The Atlantic Basin is very large. We're just a tiny part of the Atlantic Basin. And in terms of number of storms, I guess it does help a little bit from a planning standpoint, but really these forecasts no one should be coming up with their hurricane plan based on a seasonal forecast. We always hear it only takes one. But there is some science. There is some credible science based on climatology to say, okay, if these conditions are present, such as water temperatures, salinity of water, different pressures on the Atlantic, whether or not we're in an El Niño or La Niña, that's one of the biggest contributing factors to general Atlantic season activity. There's some credible science there that says, okay, if these things line up, it could be a busier season than normal. Or if these things are not lined up, it could be a quieter season. And this year, we're leaning kind of like last year into a near or above, slightly above normal season. Last year was what we call a hyperactive season. It was forecast to be just a slightly busier than normal season. So,
but all it takes is one, though.
It does. Know? And I always give it, the groundhog comes out of his hole every February 2nd, right? Mm-hmm. These forecasters come out of the woodwork and issue their forecasts every year. They only have a accuracy rate that's slightly better than the groundhog. So keep that in mind. It's slightly better than 50%.
Or it can be active, very active, and just stay offshore.
We've had several seasons like that. I think 2000 – don't quote me on this, but I think 2011 was a year that was really, really busy, but no landfalls in the United States.
Yeah, so. which we always love those. If you're just joining the show, our guest is Jeff Huffman. He's a meteorologist from the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. If you were around during last year's hurricane season, you probably got to know his voice quite well here on WGCU. If you'd like to ask him a question or tell us a story about how you were impacted last year, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So weather in Florida is more than just hurricanes, though. We're heading into rainy season, and that's more than just drizzle here in Florida. When do people need to get concerned about severe weather?
Well, rainy season seems to have started already.
Yeah.
It normally does start about 20th, 25th of the month of May. As you could tell yesterday and the day before, severe weather in Florida as it relates to thunderstorms that can produce wind damage or tornadoes can happen any time of year. We're one of the few states that can, because we are warm enough in the winter months even, to get severe weather. Obviously, it does happen more often during the rainy season. So just keep that in mind. I think our listeners should always treat severe thunderstorm warnings with some seriousness. Okay, they happen very frequently here, so sometimes it's easy to let your guard down. But anytime you're under a severe thunderstorm warning, just be smart. Don't be running across a parking lot, hanging out under a tree.
Or standing out on the beach by yourself.
Yes, or a golf course. Yeah. Stay away from windows whenever the winds pick up. Those just take cover inside. And of course, a reminder that tornadoes can be a significant threat even here in South Florida. Yes, they sometimes are weaker than the tornadoes you might see up in the Midwest. But I don't know about you, even a weak tornado with 70 mile an hour winds.
I don't want to stand in the middle of
no,
that.
No, and you don't want to be caught outside and you want to move to an interior room in your home because a tree could fall through your window. It's that kind of stuff.
So, you're from the Midwest, so am I. And a lot of the people that live in our area in Southwest Florida are from the Midwest. And we were trained from when we were little kids to look at the weather. And if you see a cold front or a warm front coming through and you see cold air mass coming up against a warm air mass, that's right. going to give you a line of thunderstorms. And that's when you need to get nervous. And that always happens in the spring, right? Or usually happens in the spring. Do we have that kind of same dynamic here in Florida? That we watch with those fronts that come through and that convergence of hot and cold? Is that what causes our thunderstorms?
In the cooler season, yes. We have two different types of fronts here in Florida. You have the fronts, like you mentioned, that come in from the west in the wintertime. Okay, with, you know, then we have the smaller sea breeze fronts. Sometimes you see those coming from the east here when the Atlantic sea breeze moves all the way across. You know, it's a smaller scale than the front you're talking about in the Midwest. But, yeah, that can cause some squall line type wind damage. So be aware of that.
But the thunderstorms that we're looking at over the course of the summertime, they're not the same kind of a thing.
They have some different – they're different in some ways. But a thunderstorm is a thunderstorm.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. So just pay attention to your to your apps and your weather things.
Stay
and
alert.
Your alerts.
Stay informed. Yep.
Can you tell me a little bit about, speaking of apps, how technology has really changed things for you as a meteorologist and for us as news people covering it? For example, we were talking earlier about Facebook Live, and at one point there were more than 500,000 people watching you from Gainesville on NPR's page. I mean, that's an amazing reach, and that digital reach really kind of helps you keep people, you know, who are part-time residents informed. So, I mean, were you surprised by how many people were interested in seeing what was going on down here?
A little bit. I've kind of understood that the potential reach, I think what happened during Irma especially, which is what you're referring to with the NPR coverage, because – and this is one of the reasons why the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network exists. It's because we know people come and go from this state. So the technology has made it easier for those who maybe have vacation homes down here to stay informed and stay up to date. And technology has helped us in the weather community as well. I mean, the forecast modeling, the ability to see things on a higher resolution scale like we've never seen before. But sometimes that technology can work against us.
Wondering, I mean, do you have like armchair meteorologists that want to tell you how to do your job?
Yes, we have a few of those right now because there's models, you know, those famous models showing potential tropical threat next week, even here in Florida. That can work against us a little bit if you don't understand, if you don't throw in the sauce. Let's go back to the sauce.
Right.
You have to understand the context behind them and what they're thinking. Also, technology can hurt us. Brian Norcross, you've heard his name and heard him even on this station. He mentions a lot of times that precision can be the antithesis of the accuracy, because the more precise you try to be sometimes with weather, the chances of being inaccurate go up, which inaccuracy in our business can lead to, you know, mistrust, misguidance on decision making. So you have to be careful with the technology. You have to really be careful with how precise you try to be using your technology.
It's almost kind of like you're in a middle management position, because you have people who are expecting you to know exactly what the storm surge is going to be 5 days outside of a hurricane actually even getting to the state of Florida.
Right.
But then the people want that kind of accuracy. But then when you try to call that sort of accuracy, people say, well, you weren't completely 100% right.
It's one of the reasons why, and I don't want to be misquoted on this from earlier, sometimes the best decision is to wait just a little bit longer to see the next piece of information. Because as you get closer to an event,
your precision gets a little better.
Hopefully the information gets better. But keep in mind, storm surge is a unique – I want to make sure that's – you know, clarify what I was saying there, because obviously if an emergency manager tells you to go, you evacuate, you go.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the people who are inland, who want to evacuate based on convenience, more or less. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of that up in Gainesville. I mean, people were asking me in Gainesville, should I evacuate? I'm like, are you in a well-built home? No. You know, if you're in a mobile home.
Well, it was inconvenient being here after the storm,
yes,
too, with the power outages, too.
Right. And I understand that. So, but I guess what I'm trying to say with storm surge and with any weather impact, sometimes, because, you know, Irma came for days. We knew it was coming. But sometimes you got to remind yourself you can still effectively put yourself in a better spot. Sometimes you may want to just wait a few more hours to make the best decision, is what I was trying to say. Storm surge, Julie. Remember, storm surge is one of the most difficult things to forecast. And the information you see from the National Hurricane Center, there's a reason that product is called potential storm surge inundation. It's a reasonable, what they call reasonable worst case. But you need to plan for worst case in hurricanes, because the storm surge is the most deadly.
That was the other thing too. It's not the wind. It's not that doesn't hurt near as many people as the water does.
Correct. I think more than 60 or 70% of fatalities in the last 10 years have occurred from water, from the hurricanes, not the wind. Remember that.
Yeah, that's critical. So I wanted to ask you before we came on the show. You said that you wanted to check out what was happening in the tropics. What's going on out there?
Yeah, you heard Cindy at the top of the hour from Gainesville talk about this disturbance. You know, that disturbance has kind of opened the floodgates, if you will, to tropical moisture and this deep southerly flow. I don't see it going away for maybe a couple of weeks. So we have everyday thunderstorms developing. We also, with this type of pattern, and it's not uncommon in the early part of the hurricane season, to see a tropical storm form in the Gulf or the Caribbean. So climatology says, yes, this can happen. Forecast modeling is starting to show that, yes, this might happen sometime next week, but confidence is still very low, still under 50% that something will develop. So no need to worry about it, but just know that it's not unheard of to get something this early in the year, even though hurricane season doesn't officially begin until June 1st.
Yeah, you know, we really kind of came in with a roar on this rainy season.
We did, and I don't see it letting up for quite some time. Sometimes we can get a Memorial Day front in Florida. That'd be great to drop the humidity. This is not going to happen this year. It's going to be pretty warm and humid and pretty rainy the next couple of weeks.
So what is your go-to source when you say, when you're like, oh, it seems like it might getting, you know, the weather might be turning. I don't know if you're always thinking about weather, but maybe one day you take
yeah,
a vacation.
I kind of am.
I know. But I mean, on the off chance that you're not looking at all the serious high-tech models, what kind of weather apps do you use?
For radar information, I like my own app, Florida Storms. Honestly, it's one of the fastest apps to load the radar. So when I need to see the whole perspective, I use Florida Storms.
So Florida Storms has an actual app?
Yeah, for radar and weather alerting from the Hurricane Center and the National Weather Service, you can customize those alerts. And the emergency managers in the state of Florida, the Florida Division of Emergency Management has been a great partner for this app. They have all the evacuation zone information in there, open shelters, evacuation routes. So that's my go-to app for hurricanes and quick emergency information. That's for sure. I mean, I have to say that. You know?
So, well, how do you set the app store?
Yeah, Florida Storms on both Google Play and the Apple App Store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So people just go in there. They can get. Is it free?
Yeah, it's free, and we built it. And I say I really don't have to say that. We built it to be quick. And to not require a lot of bandwidth. So that's important after a storm, you know, when the cell phone
towers.
Yeah,
no kidding. Yeah. And everybody's clogging it up, too. You know, everybody's trying to call someone to make sure they're doing all right. And then we also saw some action over in the Gulf just this last week. That's going away?
Yeah, that's drifting up toward the panhandle. And that disturbance is likely not going to develop. But it's responsible for the heavy rain. And Cindy mentioned there's a localized flash flooding threat as well in the next few days.
Yeah, boy, the flooding. We just can't get a break on that.
I mean, it seems
it's feast or famine, is it not?
Yep.
Well, thanks so much. It's been great talking with you.
Absolutely.
Jeff Huffman, he's a meteorologist from the Florida Public Radio Network. He was with us during the storm, and he'll be with us through the rest of this hurricane season and for a long time to come. It's been great to have you in the studio.
My pleasure. Thank you, Julie.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're talking property insurance from how last year's hurricane has affected the market, and those still struggling with Irma-related claims, to what folks should know heading into this year's season. I'm joined by an attorney who focuses on property insurance claim disputes and bad faith insurance litigation. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.